In order to support our show, we need the help of some great advertisers. And we want to make sure those advertisers are ones you'll actually want to hear about. But we need to learn a little bit more about you to make that possible. So would you please do me a favor? Can you go to podsurvey.com/Jamie? That's J-A-M-I-E, podsurvey.com/Jamie, and take a quick anonymous survey that will help us get to know you better. That way we can bring on advertisers you won't want to skip. Once you've completed the quick survey, you can enter for a chance to win a $100 Amazon gift card. You guys, you can buy a lot of great things on Amazon for $100. Terms and conditions apply. Again, that's podsurvey.com/Jamie, J-A-M-I-E. Guys, thanks for your help. Go to podsurvey.com/Jamie. Hey, friends, and welcome to the Happy Hour with Jamie Ivey podcast. I'm your host, Jamie, and I'm so glad you're here. Each week on this show, I invite a friend to join me, and we chat about the big things in life, the little things in life, and everything in between.
Hey friends, I'm Nikki Ogden, team member of the Happy Hour podcast. Due to an unexpected crisis, Jamie is going to be delaying her book publicity and tour. She's also going to take a break from social media, public appearances, and recording new shows at this time. We want to give her space to process, discern, and recover. We are so incredibly thankful for the community that Jamie has built here at the Happy Hour, and we know that you want to share your love and support for her. The best way that you can do that is by listening to this pre-recorded show and sharing this episode with a friend. We're so thankful for you.
Well, hey guys, it's Toni Collier. I'm so excited and grateful and humbled that I get to be the guest host for the Happy Hour podcast. It's truly amazing that our friendship, Jamie and I's friendship, not only crosses personal lines, but professional lines. And so praise God that I'm equipped to do this. And we've been talking about grief, and it's been tender and full of tears and maybe some snot as well, but you know, it is what it is. And I'm excited though, because in these episodes, what we're really trying to do is give you a peek into what it feels like to not only grieve the loss of someone due to them passing away, but like more so expand our understanding of what grief actually is and what it entails. And I'm excited because instead of trying to ask my mama and them and my cousins and them, we're asking licensed professional counselors, therapists, psychiatrists, about this topic, because we just really want to make sure that for those of you listening and watching, that you're fully equipped with what grief is and how to process it. And so today on the Happy Hour, we have Dr. Allison Cook, no stranger to the Happy Hour. But I'm excited because Dr. Allison's got a new resource that we're going to be talking about a little bit as well. And so it's just going to be good. So you're going to get some information today. You're going to get some resources. We're going to give you the opportunity to invest in yourself when it comes to healing from grief. And it's just going to be so good. Allison, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, Toni. I'm so glad to see you. It's been a while. Oh,
it has been a while. I have been underground. For anyone that does not know my story, I have walked through a pretty public divorce in the past 6 months and have been clawing my way back to doing this, to being able to, with integrity, with health, get back up again, right? Like, and I tell you this, I am no stranger to grief, Allison, okay? I have and am still walking through stages and levels and crevices of grief. And my heart here and my longing really is that for anyone going through anything hard and painful, that hopefully bits and pieces of my story would help you maybe feel connected to, not alone anymore, seen a little bit, and encouraged that you're going to make it and you're going to get back up again too. So, boop. Here's what we're going to start with. Just a very simple question. I think that our generation and maybe the generations that came before us have thought about grief as this thing that you do when someone passes away. Like that's what grief is. But I think over the years we have seen that grief is much, much more. Simple question, Allison, what is grief? How do we describe it? How do we hold it? What is it?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I'm glad you're highlighting that because grief is really a complicated set of emotions. Yeah. It's a constellation of a lot of different emotions. It's also not just sadness.
Oh.
It's Yeah, it's sadness. It's anger. Mm. It's oftentimes a feeling of longing, a feeling of confusion. It can entail shock, depending on the nature of the loss. So any loss, right? So I like to differentiate between loss and grief. A loss is the thing that happens. And a loss, yes, it can be a death of someone you love. It can be the loss of a relationship.
Yeah.
It can be sudden. It can be a slow loss. It can be the loss of health. It can be the loss of a dream. It can be the loss that we've experienced on behalf of maybe even one of our children. Mm. You know, it can also be a good thing, right? So losses, losses are part of life, right? A loss can be, oh my gosh, my child is, you know, leaving the nest or starting school. And while I feel happy about that, I also feel some loss. I feel some loss about that little person that's not with me anymore in, you know, in that sense of they're still here, but that, that season of life is gone, right? So, so loss is a part of life, and grief is our emotional response to those losses, no matter how tiny or how giant. And so this is where grief is such a complicated emotion. It can be small, you know, it can be, oh, I'm feeling sad about that. It can be simple, but it can also be this really complicated bundle of anger and confusion and shock and heartache. And so, so that's where I think it's so important to talk about grief as this really complicated set of feelings.
I really appreciated how you said it's, you know, grief is our response to some, to loss, and it could be like a little tiny loss and it could be like a real big, huge thing. And I like that because I don't know, there's like this belief I believe in people that it's like, I can't grieve unless it's something really big. Like I would look crazy if I grieved. I had a friend that lost a dog, a pet, and she was like, I can't grieve. I'm like, yes, you can. You know, we fall into the pain comparison trap and we're like, well, this isn't as big and this isn't as whatever. And so I think I just really love that you honored that no matter how tiny to you perspective wise or how big or even medium sized the loss is, it's a loss nonetheless. And our response is going to be grief. Now, that's a hard statement. So I don't know if I'm right. Okay. But it is always grief, right?
It
we're always
going
to feel it.
It is the normal human response to loss. No matter how big or little, it's not something we shouldn't feel. And this is one of the things we'll probably get into, but I've got this new book coming out called I Shouldn't Feel This Way.
I know. It's so perfect for this interview.
Right. And literally, Tony, how I landed on that is the first feeling we often feel when it comes to grief is I shouldn't feel this way.
I shouldn't feel this way. The guilt. Mm-hmm.
And that is a part of naming that, noticing that. Oh my gosh, where did I get that message? Where did I learn that?
Yep.
Is so often a preceding step to even getting to the normal human emotion that we actually need to experience, that if we didn't experience would mean we're, you know, sociopaths. If we didn't experience grief, you know, it's normal to experience. It's healthy to experience. And so you're right. We have this sort of latent, inherent, inherited idea that we shouldn't feel it or we shouldn't give ourselves permission to feel it. And it's so important.
It is so important. We're just going to dive right into that. I like personal example. I remember the days whenever I cried, I apologized to all my friends. And there's like so many people that's listening in right now. They're like, yeah, I always say, sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm crying. I'm so sorry. Yeah. I apologize. Give me a second.
Yeah.
I'm going to stop. And I have my friend, Carrie Scott Garcia, who I love so much. One time I said, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm crying. I'm so sorry, Carrie. She said, Tony, your tears are stunning. And it just about healed all my childhood wounds. I was like, what? She's like, oh, this is so stunning. And I do think that I can vividly remember from my childhood, my dad saying, stop crying. You're making excuses. Yeah. It was an excuse to me. It was a hindrance to me. Why don't we like to grieve? Where does that come from? Help us get to the source, Allison.
Yeah, there's so many different reasons. You just named one, right? Uh-huh. People in our lives tell us the way that we are parented so often. And again, no shade on our parents. Generationally, there are different themes in the way we were parented. Those of us who grew up in the 80s or the 90s, we weren't so steeped in this culture of, wow, feelings actually matter.
Yeah.
We need to honor feelings. And so again, even the best parents sometimes shove those aside. They're uncomfortable. We don't know what to do with them. We don't know how to talk about them. And so we got those messages often from childhood, you know, just do that by yourself. We exiled those feelings. Sometimes we get it from our culture, we get the toxic positivity from our secular culture often. You should just, you know, choose joy. We can get it from our faith communities, you know, which is, you know, God wouldn't want you to feel sad, or we just too quickly jump to the spiritualizing of, you know, God will make it okay. Well, yes. And also, we have to go through a process of honoring the valid emotions that are a healthy human response to loss.
Do you think that guilt is the driving force to us not wanting to grieve or to take up space or to cry in front of someone?
I think there's two things. One is the guilt, the inner guilt tripping, which is usually rooted all the way back to messages we got from the past, right? Where we just feel guilty because we don't know what else to feel. We feel the thing and we don't feel like we're supposed to feel the thing. And so we guilt trip ourselves. Just don't feel that way. Don't be selfish or whatever. Don't take up space. But the other thing a lot of us do, again, based in the way that we were parented and the messages we received, and I use this word not lightly, Tony, is we gaslight ourselves. We invalidate the reality of our experience. That's all that big kind of trendy, buzzy word means. It means we tell ourselves, we try to talk ourselves out of the reality of our experience. It's a form of manipulation. We try to manipulate ourselves. And it's really insidious.
Look at I'm your like, face. I know, I'm like trying to think about the moments that I've done that to myself.
Yeah.
I'm in.
If you think about gaslighting, it's invalidating someone's real experience. It's a form of deception, and it takes us away from the truth. I think it's one of the enemy's biggest tools.
Yeah.
Right. 100%. And so when we do it to ourselves, we're saying, you shouldn't feel that way. You're fine. When in fact, we're sad. We're mad. Wow. We feel betrayed. We're angry. That is the truth. Now, the truth, I say lightly, it doesn't mean that we don't need to engage a process of discerning what to do with those feelings, of understanding those feelings and the magnitude. Sometimes we have disproportionate responses, but those feelings still matter. And we need to first start by honoring the reality of what we feel.
If you don't know it, guys, I'm a Texas girl through and through. I've lived here most of my life. I was born here and I love traveling. Here's why I love traveling throughout Texas, because it has a vast landscape of cultures, regions, destinations, and activities, which means there's an infinite number of different travel experiences. And no two travelers are exactly alike, and it means that no two trips should be either. If you're a beach person, well, you can have fun under the sun with Texas's 350 miles of coastline. If you're more of a rugged vacation type, there are campgrounds, hiking trails, and state parks galore. And foodies cannot get enough of Texas's world-famous barbecue and Tex-Mex. Enjoy live music, visit internationally recognized art museums, and check out thrilling cowboy experiences. And now, Travel Texas offers a one-of-a-kind online trip builder that allows users to generate a custom, visually led trip matched to their unique interests. Guys, come visit my state. Visit traveltexas.com/get-your-own to get the only trip to Texas that matters. Yours. That's traveltexas.com/get-your-own.
You guys, in January of 2024, I made a commitment to myself. I wanted to get stronger, which meant I needed to get in the gym, which means I needed to move my body in different ways. You guys know I love to walk. Well, it's spring, and spring is the best time for us to start a new workout routine. It's our yearly collective warm-up, and Peloton is here for everyone's yearly warm-up. This is the best time to get into a good rhythm, to tap into your power, and build towards your summer you. I love my Peloton. It accommodates to my schedule with a variety of class links to choose from. I can choose a 30-minute class. I can choose a 45-minute class. If you only have 5 minutes, there's literally a class to get you moving your body in 5 minutes. Peloton has a range of class types fit for every goal and every mood. There are classes if you want to hear country music, if you want to hear rock, if you want to go back to the 80s. If you can't run, take a walking class. Need some grounding?
try yoga. If you want to level up, go for their Pilates or HIIT workouts. Here's what I love is that you can move at your own pace. And that is what I'm learning that my body needs right now. It needs to move at its own pace. Peloton makes the process easier with personalized recommendations and guided programs that take all the guesswork out of working out. You guys, we think about so many things during the day. Let's take the guesswork out. Let's jump right in and let's keep our fitness journey fresh every single day. Peloton has everything you need to get you where you're going. Whether you prefer to run outdoors, row or ride at home, or strength train at the gym, Peloton has something for you. I personally love a good 45-minute hip-hop class. It gets me moving. It gets me excited. It's my favorite genre of music. Just ask my kids. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com. That's onepeloton.com.
Gosh. Okay. I think I'm like a grief junkie at this point. It's interesting because I remember the days when I would just cry uncontrollably. Like there was just moments where I just I didn't even control it. I just was in my car, hit a worship song or something and just started to boo-hoo. And in those moments, I remember vividly, there were two people that I would call my best friend, Aaron, or my dad. And which is very interesting because my dad is actually the very person that taught me that emotions were excuses, but we've since reconciled and redeemed our relationship. And I remember being on the phone with my dad on the highway in the car, just crying, and he's just sitting there. And it's funny because on one end, I would expect that I would want my dad to like, give me some words of encouragement, like tell me I'm going to be okay. But there was just something about his presence, about him just listening to me, that made the grief a little bit lighter. I'd love for you to talk about what it feels like maybe to grieve alone and maybe that being the very thing that we're most afraid of and what happens in our brains and in our hearts when we don't have to grieve alone, when we invite other people in.
Yeah. Yeah. When we think about this, so I'm going to take it for a second to this idea of trauma, which... Yeah. Really, at its essence, simply means unwitnessed pain.
Wait. Okay, trauma is unwitnessed pain.
That's essentially what Gabor Mate, Bessel van der Kolk, all the trauma experts are distilling this very complicated experience down to. So any painful loss, any painful event kicks up emotions inside, kicks up grief. And in the absence of being witnessed, in that emotion, in that experience of pain, anger, confusion, shock, we exile it when we're by ourselves and usually as children, right?
Yeah.
That's where we pick up all of these messages because we don't know what to do. So we guilt trip and gaslight ourselves. And when we take those emotions out and bring them to someone else, this is the way God designed our nervous systems, our minds, our souls. When we take those emotions out and we bring them into someone else into them, suddenly that pain is being witnessed. It's being shared.
Yeah.
And it becomes lighter. And we begin to name it, but we also begin to process it. And that other person initially in particular, just like your dad did, doesn't even have to say anything. They just have to be with us in that pain. There's something really powerful that happens as that pain just sort of comes out of us and we're no longer hiding it. Shame festers in secrecy, but we heal in connection with other people. Now, again, it takes the kind of person that doesn't try to problem solve, doesn't try to fix, just listens. Person. We'll get there. There's a stage for that. I call it framing in my book. There's a stage to begin to frame the loss. But initially, it's just about presence. It's just about being with.
Oh, this is just so good. Okay, I want to bring us back. Allison, you'll remember this moment. You know, I'm in a confessional community. It's seven of us. We tell all of our business to each other and we hold ourselves accountable to God first, obviously, and the Holy Spirit in the room, but to each other as well. And there was one time that we had our little monthly call for 3 hours. We were processing and we got to have you on. And oh my goodness, I don't think I have snot cried on one of those confessional community calls than when you and I were processing this part of me Which is such a beautiful thing. I mean, Dr. Allison has all sorts of resources. The book that I got introduced to Allison with is Boundaries for Your Soul. And it's all around this part work. And we were processing on this call 13-year-old Tony. And I honestly was disgusted by her and I did not want her in the room and I don't want to talk about her. And I realized in this season of divorce and betrayal and all the things that I've walked through over the last 6 months, 13-year-old Tony is the one that got triggered the most. I don't even know if that, I don't know how to say these words, okay? But that's, I felt her presence the most in this season because the question that I kept asking is, why did I stay so long? Why was it so difficult for me to leave? I was in so much pain. I did not deserve the, why did I stay so long? And it was this 13-year-old in me that lost her virginity at 13 in her SpongeBob SquarePants bedroom to a much older guy. And it just was very manipulative and it was not good. And I just hated her. And I did not want to grieve that that is actually a part of who I am, that I long for male attention, that there's lust there, that there's insecurity there, that I have this core belief that I have to have a man and I have to be married in order to be valuable. And I hate that part of me. And yet, if I don't grieve that, if I don't grieve losing my virginity at 13 and, you know, being promiscuous and all these different things, then I actually won't heal well today. And I just, I don't know how complex we can get, but I would love for you to talk about what it looks like for us to not only heal and grieve today, but how it is so connected to these other parts of us as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for being just so honest. I always appreciate Tony, just, you know, just how transparent and vulnerable you are, because this is real. This is what we all have. Yeah. And when we don't go back to your question and really take out these parts of us from the past, we exile them and then they act out. That leads to these, right? This is some of what, you know.
Hello. This is how we got here. All right.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. When we don't go back and really honor. And so for folks who are feeling just what you said, when you feel like you're the one that can't get out of a relationship, you're the one being harmed, and then you shame yourself because you're not sticking up for yourself, right? That's rooted in that past shame. Yeah. And I think about you saying, I hate that part of me.
I do.
Right?
Yeah.
And what I would say to you, Tony, is that's another part of you.
Oh, no. Oh, no. What?
There's another part of you that came in probably also young, another young part of you that doesn't know what to do or that didn't know what to do with all those uncomfortable feelings and with the desire for attention and was scared. But that's really threatening to another part of you. And so that part of you, kind of like a cruel parent,
wow,
just tried to manage those feelings by exiling them, by shutting them down, by hating on yourself. When instead, if you think about a good parent, a wise parent who would come to you and say, Tony, I see that there's a part of you that really likes male attention. So let's talk about it. This could get you in trouble, but also there's something else here that's beautiful. And all of us who parent know when we see these qualities in our kids that we're like, oh my gosh, this is both amazing and also really scary.
Yeah.
There's a goodness underneath that, Tony, that got burdened down by pain and by abuse and by manipulation, that what we want to do is not hate on that part of you.
Yeah.
But what we want to do is get to know the real beauty underneath that before it got twisted, before shame came in and redeemed that part of you to its God-given natural state, the way that God created you. Wow. But the only way to get there is we've got to deal with the part of you that wants to hate on you for having those feelings. We got to first start there.
I would like to not do that here on the Happy Hour. That's good. I didn't even realize that was like a whole nother part of me until this moment right here.
When I say that, we don't have to go into it, but do you have a sense in your body of that part of you?
We don't have to go into it. You're so kind. And also we're going into it. I got a little clammy. I'm not going to lie. When you said that, I was like, wait, what? and I started processing it. And I do think, first, let me say, I think there's an influence of my father there, because that same Tony, don't feel that way, that's an excuse, is the same posture that I have towards the 13-year-old me. So it's very similar to my dad. And I think I was 15 and I was at a, this is so crazy. Ah, I can't believe it. Guys, y'all all in my business right now. Okay, hopefully this will inspire you to do your own part work. I was 15. I was at a acting competition. I was like the only female, youngest girl, African-American ever in my high school to go to this acting competition. And I like won round after round after round. I got to like the fourth round and my dad was there, which was very different. He usually did not show up to competitions and things like that, but he was there. And I remember we were in this cafeteria, we're in this high school, and I go up to the list to see if I made the next round, and my name wasn't on the list, and I was devastated. I'm crying. I'm just like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. And I remember my dad says, you need to humble yourself down to the level in which you are. Like, you should not be crying. You just were not as good as the other kids, and they deserve to win because they were better than you. And so really, you need to humble yourself. You're being prideful. You're crying because you think that you deserved to win and you didn't, because you didn't do a good job. And I was like so devastated and crushed. But I think that was the moment I was like, if you don't win, if you don't do it right, it's your fault and you need to own it and you do not need to like grieve and be strong. And I think that's when I started to judge all the fragile parts of me.
Yeah.
I didn't want to be a victim anymore. So,
And listen, these are protectors. These are protective survival parts of us. They're not all bad either, right? There is a balance. There's a nuance. And again, this parenting example is one of the best ways to understand our own inner families. Uh-huh. But if you think about your kids, you first have to name and honor and empathize and connect. Yeah. And yes, this is hard. And there also can be a time and a place. That's why I talk about this framing. Yeah. Where you come back around and say, and also, maybe you weren't ready to win this competition. It doesn't mean you're bad. What can we do to help prepare you for the next one? There's another way to frame that that might have been more useful to you in that moment. And so again, those protectors that try to shut us down, or they have a good strategy. I mean, they don't have a good strategy. They have a good intent usually to try to get you to keep going.
Yep.
But they're not seeing the big picture. And so we don't want to exile those parts of us either, but we do want to help them tune it down. Give me a minute to feel what I feel and just to feel the heartache. And then as it comes out, then we're ready for a little bit of that constructive feedback that's honoring, that's respectful, that's also honoring the whole big picture of the situation, right? Yeah. So that's why these simplistic pat answers, either the, you know, you shouldn't feel that way, or you should just feel everything that you feel all the time and never set a healthy boundary on it or a gentle boundary on it, is also not helpful. So we do need that nuance. So that part of you isn't a bad part. It just needs to have a bigger picture.
Some massaging.
That's right. That's right.
We're working on this, girls. Okay. Okay. So I want to recap for us, because I want to move into a different kind of section of this. Obviously, we know that grief isn't just about big losses. Sometimes it's about small ones and medium ones. Some of us have to really pay attention to some of the ways that we started to create beliefs in us when we were just little girls and boys, and start to reframe that so that we have the opportunity to grieve well as adults. Now, okay, so we've got this new book, I Shouldn't Feel This Way. I feel like some of us have started to connect with why we have that belief. Well, how do we transition out of that belief? How do we get from a place of, I shouldn't feel this way, I shouldn't be crying, I shouldn't have these big emotions, to like, this is normal and this is good? How do we move from that?
Well, the first thing is to notice that I shouldn't feel this way. The second thing I talk about is to honor the reality of what I call the crossroads. And if you think about a crossroads, right, an intersection where there's a bunch of different roads colliding, they're inherently busy. They're inherently chaotic. There's a reason we have to stop at a crossroads, especially if we're not sure which way to go. And the problem is, we don't, when we're feeling a lot of feelings, remember, grief is complicated. There's a lot to it. It feels uncomfortable to stop in it. We don't want to stop in it. We want to just keep blowing past. We want to just keep cruising down that road and blow past the busy intersection where there's all these different feelings. And so the next thing we really have to do is just, what I tell people is just, oh my gosh, I've got to stop here at the crossroads. It's not necessarily a comfortable place to be. Yeah. It's confusing. I don't know what I feel. We feel kind of off kilter. We feel wobbly. We feel disoriented. That's also normal. And so the more we normalize that, you're not going to immediately jump into the next feeling of, aha, I've got it, right? It's going to take a minute.
Yeah.
And so we have to pause. We have to stop. And so just even normalizing the conflicted, uncomfortable, wobbly, disoriented place in between, I call them, these places in between where we've left something behind.
Yeah.
That's hard. And we're not yet sure where we're going to be. It's going to be better. I promise it's going to be okay. But there is this place in between in the middle that's messy and that's hard. And so I think I just want to, before we get to, you know, where do we go? It's almost like really doubling down on, there's going to be a moment. I don't, you know, it depends on how long we can talk about that, where you're going to feel confused. And that's okay. You need to really, this is why we need other people. We really have to have folks who get that, who don't rush us to the quick fix, who don't rush us out of our feelings, who sit with us like your dad did that day in the car, and let us be in that murky place in between.
Okay, but that's so awkward and uncomfortable, though.
It is.
How do we get comfortable with that? I can imagine some of my friends right now being like, I don't want to do that. I do not want to do that.
We want to keep going.
I would say, Tony,
it doesn't mean we put our whole lives on hold.
Yeah.
The more we learn this as a normal part of life, the more we practice it, the more we find those places in between throughout our day. I talk about all the different types of places in between you can build. One might be, one of the things I do when it's not huge and it's like safe to drive is if I'm in my car, turn off the music, turn off the podcast, and just notice my feelings.
Wow.
Let's be present to myself. I take a walk. So you can schedule these places in between. If that feels too overwhelming, schedule calls with a friend, a safe friend, someone who's going to honor the process. And you can say, listen, I need you to just be with me a couple of times this week. Yeah. Could we put it on the calendar?
That's good.
Right? And when you see that, you begin to kind of bracket it, which kind of gives you a little ability to go throughout your day. You're not going to let it shut you down, but you are going to honor that messy work of beginning to untangle those emotions as you go.
I like that. I think, like, for me, I'm a super extrovert and I have had to get real comfortable with being alone, with creating space to feel, because I can extrovert my way out of a situation real hard. I could schedule with everybody and do everything and be everywhere and never create space, is what we're talking about, this in-between space. Yeah. Create that so that I have the opportunity to feel. Okay, so once we have felt and we're like, that was weird, and then for many of us, we have a feelings wheel in our home, okay, so that we can actually practice naming our feelings and actually put like the correct and accurate name to it. Where do we go from there?
Yeah. So these three guideposts that I lay out, and I shouldn't feel this way. There's the naming, as you're describing, this framing, this place in between is the hardest one. It's the one, you know, that's where it's murky and uncomfortable. We're trying to figure it out. So once we've kind of framed it, if you imagine yourself at that crossroads, you've stopped, you've taken some breaths, you've done that work of really trying to understand what's going on. What am I really feeling? What are some of the roots of this? What did the other person do? What didn't they do? What's my part? What's not my part? You know, all of that work of framing, right? Then we kind of look ahead and we brave the next step. We brave a new path. And that new path might be, depending on the size of the loss, it might be setting a new boundary. It might be moving toward something life-giving. It might be, you know, it's anything that says, you know, what have I learned from this? And how do I want to take a different way forward? We start to get clarity, and you'll know. you'll know what it is. You'll begin to see it, but you can't get to that braving until you've kind of given yourself permission to do the work of the framing of the place in between. And so, you know, it might be, you know, if you're grieving a betrayal, if you're grieving a loss, you might start to see, you know what? I need to shut down that, that avenue of connection for a while.
Yes, girl.
To that group of people because it's too painful for me. And maybe in 6 months from now, I'll revisit it.
Yep.
But for now, it seems pretty clear to me that I got to shut down that avenue. Wow. And I need to instead pull in a lot of really supportive people. And so you've got the clarity to see that next step, and then you execute. You tell, you know, listen, I'm not going to be available in this capacity for this amount of time. You know what you're doing. You start to see your way to making those healthy decisions to put you on the right path toward healing.
This is so interesting because as you're unpacking it, I'm thinking about the last 6 months and specifically like the first 3 months. And I can see this framework in my life so vividly because when I initially found out, I was actually in a hotel room with my friends, Jamie Ivey, Jessica Honegger, Lisa Whittle. And I remember calling them and just weeping and then hopping on the phone with my counselor and weeping some more and getting in the car, heading to the airport and just crying and crying and crying. And then I realized, and then there was those moments with my dad in the car where I was just crying. I was creating space to just feel all the things. I was like, this is crazy. I'm going to have to end my marriage. What is happening right now? And I just kept reaching out to people. Like that was my thing. I was texting everyone. I had everyone on a text group, every feeling and emotion. I was calling for emergency confessional community calls. I was like, I need help really feeling this deeply. I don't just want to bypass this as I had in the past. I just hid it and kept it moving and forgave and blah, blah, blah. But this time I was like, I want to heal really well. And then I do think I remember the moment where I was like, okay, it's not that we're done crying, but we need to create some healthy boundaries. And we really need to like figure out what it looks like to not repeat this behavior or to not accept this behavior repeatedly over and over again.
And you felt that in your body, right? You started to gain.
Well, it was like agency. Like I think,
exactly.
Oh, this is so good. I think I started to get agency because again, that first month, I just was like a fragile little girl. I was like, I am so crushed. I can't get out of bed. I'm not eating. I'm not sleeping. And then I was like, I have children and a career and I got to get up at least for a little while to figure out how to create a safe space for me and my kids. But it was agency.
Exactly, Tony. And that is the fact that you gave yourself permission. It's also credit to you for all the work you'd put in when you weren't in crisis.
Yeah,
that
you
had
those
structures set up. And I say this to people, do that work now. Don't wait till there's a crisis you kind of knew who to go to and where those safe places were.
Yeah.
And so give younger you credit, right, for having the wisdom to be a part of those communities. But exactly what you said is what happens. That's the process. Mm. And in our culture, we do not often honor those places in between where you gave yourself permission to go to the roots of all those complicated, hard feelings. Mm. And you found it. As you do that, our bodies are designed to start to feel clarity, to start to feel agency. The emotions have flown through. It's just like healing. It's just like healing a physical wound. Right? We don't beat a broken arm into healing. We put it in the right context. We give it structure. We give it support. Wow. We set it. And over time, it does the work of healing until it knows what to do again. It's exactly the same to these wounds to our soul. Right? And you felt it. You were like, okay, I'm pushing on this bruise. It still hurts, but I also kind of know what to do. That's exactly, and that gets you into braving. I kind of know what I need to do. And I guarantee you came up with much wiser, much more deeply rooted solutions for yourself than if you just been like, I'm just going to blow through this. You would have, you know, 5 years from now, maybe ended up in the exact same situation. But instead, you gave yourself the process of moving through it. And that's what it's all about.
I just think about if I wouldn't have let myself feel and how different I think I would be right now. And honestly, I'm just going to go out on a limb here. I'm not saying that the last 6 months have been easy, because sweet daddy God, it has not.
Yep.
But I think if I would have put my big girl pants on and just been strong, like the world tells us to, and just left the marriage, got my stuff, whatever, done it, if I wouldn't have taken my time, if I wouldn't have grieved, if I wouldn't have actually just been in pain and been fragile, this is going to be weird. I don't feel like it would have been as easy. Now, easy is relative, okay? But I look at myself now, 6 months later, and I'm like, I feel good. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like I would have been in a worse place for a longer time had I not just said, no, we're not going to pretend strong here, baby girl. Like, we're not about to pretend perfect. We're not going to do that this time. This time, we are going to be sad and devastated and crushed. And I don't know. I'm just like, I'm like someone needs to hear that. Like, it actually could be a little bit easier for you if you just did the hard thing first.
There's a word for what you're describing.
What it's is not it? Help me. I don't know.
What it is. It's not a glamorous word, but it's a beautiful word. It's integrated. It's integrated.
Oh,
it's whole, right? And if you think about what it means, what integrated means, it means the different parts coming together. It's not that you're happy about what happened. It's not that you aren't aware still of the residual cost of this loss. And also, it's integrated into the larger whole of who you are. You're also really proud of yourself. That's a healthy emotion. Yeah. You're also really aware of your strength. Huh. That's healthy. You're also aware that you're in a good place because you haven't bypassed the loss, the sadness, the anger. You've integrated that into the whole. And that is an incredible feeling inside. And it's a very hard feeling to describe. Just like grief is complicated and it's a lot of different things. Yeah. Integration is a lot of different things. It's a sturdiness. It's a sense of your own resilience. It's a sense of agency. And it combines good emotions, positive emotions, and the reality that I also know how to face the hard emotions. And there's a strength in that that is irreplaceable. It's such a great feeling. We don't see a lot of it in our world today.
Woo! That makes me cry.
Hmm.
I am really proud of myself. Like, even when you said the words, like, there's a sense of your resilience. I'm like, that makes me cry. And I think I want that for other people. I think that's, you know, it's why I'm the broken crayon still color girl. Like, well, you know, like, I'm proud of myself and I want that for other people. And I want us to get good at, I didn't know what the word was before, but integration, so that it doesn't crush us.
That's right.
You know, so that the grief and the pain, and because it really doesn't have to. Like, we could do it differently now. We could model it differently for our kids now.
That's
like,
right.
There is another way.
That's
an
right.
Easier way. Not easy. Easier. Okay.
That's right. Yeah.
Wow. That's right. That really touched me. Okay, I'm back. Woo!
It's beautiful. The work that you're doing.
Beautiful.
So needed. And beautiful, I think about that word too, because I think grief, to go back to what you said about the tears being beautiful, beautiful is a complicated word.
Yeah.
Beautiful is not superficial pretty. Beautiful is the whole constellation of all these God-made emotions coming together. It's a symphony. Right? Oh. It's a symphony. And we need more symphonies, you know?
We need more symphonies. Listen, I knew this interview was going to be good. Yesterday, I was telling the producer, I said, listen, I said, here's what's about to go down. Okay. Dr. Kurt, he's going to be philosophical. It's going to be great. It's going to be awesome. Deborah Folletta, she's going to hit us in the face. Okay. It's going to be hard, but it's going to be awesome. And then Dr. Allison Cook is going to come in and she is going to rock us into the acceptance of grief. And I do feel rocked. Okay. I feel rocked like a small infant at this point. Okay. And I love that about you. And I'm so excited about this new book because, well, one, you've just impacted my life already with our one little call about our parts work when I was 13, but also watching you and how intelligent you are and brilliant you are be so nurturing at the same time is just a real gift to me and a real gift to this world. And so I'm really excited about people reading this new book. I shouldn't feel this way because how many times have we said that? And how many more times have we thought it? Yeah. Even if we didn't say it out loud, even if we didn't want to, you know, say those words because we're like, okay, I don't want anybody to get on me. But we felt it. Like, why have I been crying for so long? Why have I been grieving for so long? And maybe it's not at all that the grief has to last that long. Maybe it's just your strategy in grieving. And I feel like today we gave people a new strategy.
That's right. Lean into it. Lean into the pain. It's uncomfortable. It's awkward. But I promise you, as you lean into the confusion and the chaos and the complexity, that is paradoxically the way through it. And it does get easier. It does. It doesn't mean the grief gets less. But the more you know how to do it, you're working with the grain of your God-given design. You're working with the grain of how God made you. It works.
It works, family and friends. And let me just tell you, I'm a living testimony of that. I am a living testimony. If you're ever just like, they're lying. I'm like, look at my life. It's been real crazy. And I feel more integrated than I ever felt in my entire life. So thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing your gift with the world. We'll put the book and all the links. We talked about a few books, so we'll put all of them in the show notes so that you guys can get all caught up on Dr. Allison and how incredible she is and how much she's helped us all process hard things. So, love y'all.
The Happy Hour is produced and hosted by myself, Jamie Ivey, with assistance from Nikki Ogden and Ashley Caldwell. And the show is edited by Jason Talley.